G'day. You're listening to The Misadventures of Beau Hogart and the Brilliant Blue-Eyed Woman. My name's Vic, plume.com. Chapter 21, Knife to Know You. That's K-N-I-F-E, Knife to Know You. Enjoy. It was nearly feeding time at the zoo, but first, Amy had to remind Slick to punch in the codes. Her necklace was getting restless, and that meant Lena's necklace would also be getting restless. The gaps between the subtle warning beeps were becoming shorter, while the beeps themselves were becoming incrementally indiscreet. Silver in colour and made from a diamond-cut anodized magnesium alloy, the necklaces easily passed as costume jewellery. But if Slick didn't punch the correct code into his cell phone at set times, or if the necklaces were tampered with in any way, a set of needles would inject a toxic cocktail of chemicals into the wearer's neck. This was another reason Slick had so many cell phones ready to receive his SIM card available inside the pantry. Standing at the kitchen bench, Amy heard her necklace beep again. Much louder and in a specific tone, indicating time was running out the door with its pants on fire.
"Hey babe, it's time,"
said Amy calmly, trying not to upset Slick as he busily searched online for cars worth $1 million.
"Yeah, I know," he grumbled. "It's beeping. I'm not fucking deaf, you know."
He was a tiresome handful to say the least, but precious life made him worth the effort.
"Oh, you'd look extra slick driving that one, babe,"
Amy said, looking over Slick's shoulder at a red Ferrari on screen. This time his ego got a boost, and he responded favourably. Leaning in close, Amy rested her head on his shoulder, breathing warmly on his neck and kissing it.
"How would you like pizza tonight, babe? Just like your mama used to make."
Amy had a new recipe she was dying to try out on Slick. It was going to have triple anchovies, just like his mummy used to make, marinara sauce, and a base made of freshly ground sleeping pill puff pastry.
"Fuck pizza. I'm sick of your pizza,"
Slick declared.
"Tonight I'm taking you out for dinner. You're going to dine with the slickest and soon-to-be richest man in Vegas."
He was getting cocky and very proud of himself now that he had $1 million, although he wouldn't have had any of it if it wasn't for Amy.
"I'm going stir-crazy in here. I need some fresh air and a decent meal for a change. Something like Mama used to make."
"Oh, that'd be great. Thanks, Slick,"
she said, feigning joy, desperately hoping he'd change his mind.
"Some of y'all meals are okay, babe, but you just can't do it like Mama did."
Amy was starting to wonder exactly what else his mummy used to do for him. And then the necklace beeped like she'd only heard it beep once before, when Slick had gotten drunk and lazy. It was the 1 minute remaining alert beep, sending Slick scurrying for his cell phone on the kitchen bench. Reaching out, he fumbled, sending his phone flying forward onto the floor, landing with a loud crack.
"Grab it!"
he yelled, but Amy was already diving on it. The warning beeps were now occurring so close together they had evolved into one continuous squeal, indicating 30 seconds until kill. With no time to get a new phone from the pantry, Amy threw it back at him, hoping he'd catch it and praying the phone still worked. Slick caught the cell but was so horrified at the thought of losing his $1 billion he stood frozen, staring at the cell, trying to remember Lena's code. Amy knew she had to snap Slick out of his panicked, childlike mind, or she and Lena were as good as dead. Hurrying to his side, Amy snatched the phone from his hand and struck his face with a slap and a half of full screen tilt. Slick's mouth remained wide open, like a sideshow clown waiting to receive a ping pong ball. With the conviction of a dead woman walking, Amy stepped forward and thumped both palms onto his chest, forcing him and his ass onto a kitchen bar stool.
"Slick, be calm. Think,"
Amy demanded, looking directly into his anxious eyeball.
"Enter the code for Lena's necklace."
She shoved the phone into his hand.
"You've done this 1,000 times before, and you will do it again. You've only got a few seconds, so be a man and do it now."
Slick was all shook up like an Elvis cocktail. He entered 2 numbers, then paused. He entered another number, stopped, and deleted them all. Amy spoke in a warm but firm tone.
"You will type in the codes, Slick, and then we will go out for dinner, and all will be good."
Over the sound of the necklace's non-stop, ear-piercing scream, Slick breathed out a moaning breath, punched in Lena's code and sent it off. He started on Amy's code, this time punching in the numbers quickly before sending it off. They waited in the now. After three severely long and memorable seconds, Amy's necklace stopped being alarmed. They sighed one almighty sigh. At last, all was silent and calm. But when Amy looked at Slick, she saw a tornado alley twister forming in his indignant eyeball. By slapping his cheek, she'd helped him punch in the correct code, but it now looked like he'd soon be punching her.
Well done, Slick. You're amazing. You entered the correct code.
A fire joined the tornado in his spiteful right eye.
But what if you've punched the wrong code in for Lena's necklace?
She added, attempting to avoid any physical abuse. Staring at Amy like a dark lord, he rose from the barstool that she'd thumped him onto, the flames in his eye quickly growing into a firestorm. Amy rifled through her mind's junk drawer, looking for anything that might help.
Oh, by the way, Slick, I've come up with another great idea to get you more money. More than $1 billion. But first, do you think we should check if the trillion-dollar bitch is still breathing?
Slick's eye moved at the mention of the word trillion, and Amy guessed she was safe, at least for a while. This could be the perfect opportunity to get the soda, can, and scissors.
What's this great money idea, bitch?
Slick said, hot vinegar running through his veins.
And it better be good, or we're gonna go for round two, and this time we ain't gonna be playing slappy slaps.
His greed had kicked straight in, but Amy needed more time to come up with a plausible money idea.
I'm so sorry for slapping you, but I didn't do it to hurt you.
Amy's voice cooed like a dove.
I only did it to save you $1 trillion, babe. But the fact is, if we don't go and check on the loony bitch in the wardrobe, we'll never know if I actually helped you remember the code or not. And no matter how good my new $1 trillion idea is, it won't be worth a damn if she's dead.
Slick's eye turned left, then right, then up and down, indicating his greed was overriding his angered ego. Amy was reeling him in fast, but she had to keep the tension on the line.
Is there a lump of meat in the closet, Slick, or $1 trillion breathing bucks?
She had successfully managed to avoid his violent rage, and he was already striding out the kitchen door toward the back bedroom. Grabbing a can of soda from the fridge, Amy ran across the hallway to the ensuite, where she retrieved some scissors she'd hidden inside a toilet roll. Racing to the main bathroom, she picked up Lena's changeover toilet bucket, containing a large bottle of drinking water. She lay the soda can on its side next to the water bottle and placed the toilet roll on top of the can. When she caught up with Slick, he was already inside the back bedroom, entering the security code into the closet door.
Good luck, babe,
Amy said, standing behind him, the bucket of contraband in her hand. But Slick didn't seem to hear. He was too focused on his investment. After punching in the final number, he took two steps back, forcing Amy to move aside.
Open the door,
he ordered, pulling out his pistol. Amy put down the bucket and reached for the doorknob. Her heart raced as she turned it slowly.
Open the fucking thing,
he roared. She opened the door and Lena came charging out, screeching. Amy jumped to the side and Slick stepped in, cracking Lena on the skull with his pistol. As she hit the floor, Slick dropped his knee onto her spine and drove the barrel of his gun into the back of her head. Lena's brain was holding $1 billion worth of information, but it looked like he was about to delete it with one angry, ego-driven bullet.
Ah, congratulations, babe,
Amy said, desperate to sway him from his lost path.
The $1 trillion whore's alive, and when she walks out your front door, you'll be one of the richest men in America, and all we have to do is keep her breathing for a few more days.
Slick reluctantly removed his finger from the trigger.
You goddamn fucking slut,
he growled, pushing the gun barrel even harder into Lena's head before pulling it away, returning it to its holster. Amy picked up the bucket of contraband and entered the closet.
Phew,
she said, attempting to keep him from coming in to check for contraband.
The filthy bitch missed the bucket, babe.
Amy replaced the used bucket with the new and walked out with the old, placing it on the bedroom floor. Lena was semi-conscious, writhing and moaning on the floor.
She's alive, babe,
Amy said, relieved but without showing it.
Your $1 trillion are alive. Well done, sexy. I'm so proud of you. Hopefully her brain isn't damaged.
Slick turned, staring menacingly at Amy. The fiery twister in his eye was tracking back and getting bigger. Lena made a guttural groan. Amy looked down and saw her friend vomit on the floor. When Amy looked back up, Slick stepped forward and smacked her ferociously across the face. The force spun Amy around and slammed her head into the doorframe, splitting the skin above her temple, and she dropped to the floor.
Okay,
thought Amy, dazed.
Don't panic. You're still conscious.
Slick's ego had made him strike Amy and Lena, but Amy couldn't let his feeble-minded actions destroy all the work she'd done so far. She needed to stay focused, or Lena could end up brain-damaged or dead, and Amy herself could end up locked in the closet or in the bathtub, cut into bag-sized bits. With a throbbing head and unsteady legs, Amy hopped straight back on the unbridled horse. It was imperative she calmed Slick fast. Grabbing Lena by the ankle, she began dragging her into the closet.
I deserved that, Slick,
Amy said, blood running down her face and into her mouth.
And now that we know Lena's alive...
She dropped Lena's legs and exited the closet.
I can tell you how to turn your $1 billion into $1 trillion, babe.
Amy wanted desperately to nurse her aunt and protect her.
If this concussion doesn't kill her, the next one probably will, she thought.
Out of the goddamn way,
Slick ordered, slamming the closet door and heading for the hallway.
That's one hell of a concussion you gave her,
Amy said.
But don't forget, her brain is the key to your fortune.
She knew she was pushing it, but it had to be said.
What's your fucking plan to get more money?
He growled.
Tell me now!
Amy was acting relaxed, but she was 100% wired, focused, like a base jumper about to leap off the Empire State Building, using nothing but an umbrella.
Well, Slick, it involves Lena being able to think clearly and not receive a collection of head injuries every time we open the closet door.
What the fuck do you mean, smartass?
Slick said, locking the bedroom door and walking up the hallway toward the kitchen.
Slick,
she said, in hot pursuit, leaving the soiled bucket in the hallway.
I'm not trying to be a smartass. I've got a way to get you $1 trillion, but Lena will need to have her mind working properly or the plan won't work.
Well, then tell me, goddammit!
He growled, impatient, entering the kitchen, opening the fridge door.
Okay,
she said, leaning over the kitchen sink, washing the blood from her face.
If we can get Lena's formula in digital form, we can set up deals with a number of buyers instead of just one buyer.
Amy dabbed her wound with some paper towel and turned to face Slick, who was still looking into the open fridge.
That way, instead of getting just $1 billion for Lena's physical self, you can get at least $1 trillion for the digitized information by selling it on the same day to as many people who are willing to pay for it. Then you won't be the richest man in Vegas, you'll be one of the richest self-made men in the entire world.
Amy figured in all reality any prospective buyers would want Lena's physical self or no cash would change hands. But she hoped the $1 trillion distraction would buy her just enough time to put her real plan into action. And her shtick seemed to be working. Slick was still staring into the open fridge like a medical marijuana patient who couldn't remember why they were there.
By selling the digitized information to other buyers separately, you'll get enough money to buy yourself a fleet of $20 million classic Ferraris and your own country to park them in.
Slick grabbed a beer from the fridge and spun around, facing Amy. But this time, instead of hitting her, he started singing into the unopened bottle, performing his sickly raised lip Elvis impression.
Yeah, that's right, babe. Viva Las Vegas, babe. And hey, remember, it's not my money, you sweet thing. It's our money. I'm doing this for us, babe.
Don't drink that one, babe,
Amy said, confidently walking forward and taking the long neck from his hand.
I just put those beers in before, darling. Let me get you a cold one. A big man needs a big cold beer.
Well, it felt cold enough to me, babe,
he said, resuming his sickly singing, his lip rising and falling like an abalone under cardiac arrest.
But that's okay, mama. That's okay with me. Yeah.
You're much hotter than Elvis, babe, and he only had $1 million when he died, and you know what that means.
Yeah, baby. I'm already as rich as Elvis was, and I'm gonna be even richer.
Slick continued performing with added vigor.
Well, it's a meal on a Monday, a bill set to go. Now I'm ready for a trill. Let's go, girl, go.
Sliding her hand behind the long necks, Amy selected two beers, including the one with the marked label. She removed the caps, raised her strappy white top, and placed the pill-powdered bottle between her breasts. Slick stopped singing immediately.
Congratulations, babe. Our $1 trillion plan is about to make you $1 trillion.
Amy handed Slick the barbiturated bottle of beer while suggestively licking the crown of her own bottle.
Join me in chugging down a celebratory beer, darling. And after that, I'd like you to go where no man has gone before, if you know what I mean.
Oh, lordy, yeah. No man's land,
Slick mumbled, his lip staying stiff, and more than just his interest growing.
Oh, thank you very much.
His eye darted between Amy's eyes and her breasts.
Raising the base of her bottle, Amy began chugging down her powder-free beer.
Slick followed suit, eagerly pouring the laced liquid down his horrid beer hole.
Reaching over to the bench, Amy flipped the switch on the music box. Joe Cocker's You Can Leave Your Hat On immediately kicked in. Turning her back to Slick, she slunk sexily to the kitchen doorway, giving him a sultry over-the-shoulder look while dropping her short, tight-faded blue jeans around her ankles. Then, like a chocolate bar commercial that never made it to air, she bent over, giving him an eyeful of her shapely brown skin booty and the deep pink pouch of her G-string.
Drink up, big boy,
she said, smacking her backside, jiggling her buttocks like her pole dancing alias, Tina Twerker. Slick immediately emptied the dozy dose of snoozy booze into his hideous head.
Follow me, baby,
she purred, dancing in slow circles across the hallway and into the bedroom. Slick raised his lip and announced,
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis is leaving the kitchen.
Throwing the empty long neck over his shoulder, he goose-stepped across the hallway and into the bedroom. He dropped his cell phone and pistol in the floor safe and kicked the lid shut. Amy stepped forward, grabbed his face with both hands and kissed him passionately, pushing her tongue, teeth and tonsils deep into his mouth. Dropping her hand down low, she dragged her nails up and over his business district, ripped his shirt open and pushed him backward onto the bed.
Roll over, Mr. Trill,
she said in a honey-coated voice.
I need you to get ready for no man's land. We don't want you hurting any of your thrusting back muscles while you're journeying to the center of my girth.
Slick complied. Amy selected a bottle of lubricant from the bedside table, an aid she'd purchased out of pure necessity, and poured some on his back. Massaging him, she spoke in a tone reminiscent of a bedtime story, telling him how sexy he was and how much richer he was going to be. As he moaned with pleasure, a peaceful Elvis song, In the Ghetto, drifted out from the kitchen. Amy softly sang along, continuing to massage his bristly back. When the song ended, an even better song started. It was the sweet, sweet music of Slick's nostrils, snoring like two chainsaws soaring through a log. Amy had never heard music so beautiful, but before she could finish saying,
You disgusting, greasy, slimy, putrid insult to humanity,
she'd taken the keychain from around his neck and was standing at the door of the back bedroom. As Amy tried to fit each key into the lock, her hands shook and her heart raced. Would Slick wake up before she got to speak with Lena? The first and second key didn't fit, and neither did the third, but it was only a matter of time. Once inside, Amy would be able to communicate privately with Lena for the first time since Slick had imprisoned her. Finally, a key slipped smoothly into the lock. The tumbler turned without resistance, and Amy stood inside the back bedroom. She closed the bedroom door and approached the closet. Pressing her ear against the door, she listened, deathly silence. Tapping lightly on the closet door, Amy listened again. Nothing. She tapped a bit louder. Muffled movements, ending with a dull thud, sounded at the far end of the closet. Amy dropped to the bottom of the door, pushed her fingers underneath to lift the soundproofing foam, and whispered as loudly as she could.
Lena, it's Amy.
Silence, and then a succession of thuds drew closer.
It's Amy. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Amy. Where's Slick?
Came the reassuring sound of her brilliant blue-eyed buddy.
Thank God you're alive,
Amy cried in a whisper.
Things might be easier if I wasn't,
Lena said.
But I am, so let's deal with it.
Oh, Lena, are you okay? How's your head?
It's having a horrendous house party I can't escape from. How'd you get in here? Where's Slick?
I gave him a beer-flavored pill shake and took his keychain.
Sleeping pills?
Yeah.
Oh, you're good, Ames. Well done. How many pills did he have?
4.
How long ago?
About 15 minutes ago.
Excellent. Let's get to work.
Have you got a plan?
Amy asked.
Well, any plans I did have are now completely irrelevant, because Slick's asleep and you're free to roam. But time is the major factor here, Ames, because Sleeping Beauty could wake at any moment, so listen carefully, darling.
Fire away,
said a revitalized Amy.
Okay, are there any more soda cans in the house?
There's a bunch in the kitchen.
Okay, you need to go into the kitchen and get another soda can, and the longest, sharpest knife you can find. Make sure the blade is at least 8 inches long. Then, before you bring the soda can back here, go into Slick's bedroom and slit his throat.
Oh my God, Lena!
What?
Lena blurted, confused by Amy's shock. Sure, slashing Slick's throat sounded horrific, but it wasn't half as horrific as the thought of spending any more time inside a dark, suffocating prison and being sold to murderous desperados.
I know he's a horrible person, but I don't know if I can walk in there and simply slice his throat open.
Why not? I'd cut his heart out in a second and wear it as a hat while I tap danced on his testicles.
Can't we break you out of here first? Then you can cut his throat.
It'd be my pleasure, but the noise we'd make trying to get me out of here could wake Lord Layabout. And if he wakes, you're as good as dead.
But I don't think I can slice someone's throat open. Can't we tie him up or something?
You could try, Amy, but if he wakes up while you're trying, you'll end up as Coyote Casserole. And what are you going to use to tie him up with? Sheets?
Amy thought hard. There had to be another way.
I've already got a plan in progress, Lena, and I think it's a good one.
Okay, great. What is it?
I've got a bunch of sleeping pills ground into powder, and it's ready to go into his pizza dough. He won't taste it because I'll put extra anchovies on it and olives.
They spoke simultaneously.
Just like his mummy used to make.
Amy felt hopeful, excited by the prospect of not having to become a killer.
Yeah, and it'll be much stronger than his beer I powdered. So after he eats the pizza, he'll be knocked out deep, and he won't wake for ages.
Lena quickly contemplated Amy's information. Then she cocked her mind's pistol and fired.
It's a good idea, Amy, but the heat of the oven will destroy the potency of the pills. And who knows what might happen by then. I know you don't even kill snails in the garden, but this is different. We have no real choice. We've got him lying there, asleep, right now. We won't get another opportunity like this, darling. Besides, when he wakes, he's gonna be suspicious as to why he feels so groggy. You really have no choice. All you have to do is walk in there right now and cut him. You don't have to stay and watch. You can even close your eyes. Just slice him once, properly, and then leave. It'll literally take a second to slice him. Then you can run out the door.
Amy's mind was in turmoil.
I'm not, is there...
Come on, Ames. He could wake at any minute. He's only had 4 sleeping pills. We've got to move, now.
Amy was so deeply distressed she didn't hear Lena.
Amy!
Yes, I'm here.
Why didn't you give him more than 4 pills?
Because they're bitter and he would have tasted them in the beer,
she said, her voice dripping with despondency.
That's why I came up with the pizza plan. I just needed enough pills to put him to sleep so I could come in here and find out what ideas you had and to check on you. But I don't know if I can kill him in cold blood.
But you've got him lying there on a foam platter.
Yeah, but slicing through someone's windpipe, Lena. There'd be lots of blood and weird gurgling noises and...
Amy, darling, you're thinking about this way too much.
Amy knew Lena's empathy was starting to drown under a rising wave of frustration.
Please, Amy, I know it sounds horrible, but it's nothing compared to what's in store for us if you don't do it.
Lena, there must be another way.
And then a thought exploded inside her mind.
What if I just hit him on the head?
But what if he wakes up?
I'll hit him hard enough to make sure he doesn't wake.
In that case, you'll have to hit him so hard he'll be dead or in a coma. So you might as well cut his throat. And what are you going to hit him with anyway?
A kitchen stool.
No good, Ames. They're too light and the seats are padded.
Amy knew Lena was right. The knife was the surest, safest, and easiest option. Much easier than crushing someone's skull with a 4-legged pillow. They paused, thinking of what could be used as a clubbing implement. The microwave? Too heavy and awkward, and his head would get pushed into the soft bed and lose impact. The kitchen skillet? Too light. A cast iron skillet might do the job if held sideways and brought down at an effective speed onto the correct part of his head. But using the aluminium skillet from the kitchen would be tantamount to reenacting a scene from a Bugs Bunny cartoon. And the last thing Amy wanted to hear after gonging Slick on the skull was,
What's up, Doc?
I could use one of his beer bottles.
Amy blurted hopefully.
Listen,
Lena said matter-of-factly.
You'd have to make sure you hit him like a major league baseball player, or it'd just wake him up, and then he'd take his grumpiness out on you. Besides, to do the job properly, you'd have to fracture his skull till you visibly saw pieces of his brain on the pillow. So you might as well just slice his throat. It'd be kinder.
Surely there's another way.
Amy fell silent, her mind barking ideas that travelled in a perpetual loop, always returning with the same dreadful conclusion. After a short time, Lena spoke, her words now basted in thick frustration.
Okay, fuck it. There is another way. But make no mistake, it's foolish.
Amy didn't care if it was foolish. Anything would be better than having to prepare diced throat with Adam's apple sauce.
Okay, Lins, what's your plan?
Okay, if you're certain you can't cut our abuser's throat, then this is what you'll have to do. Leave the bedroom and lock the door. Then go to the kitchen and get a long, sharp knife and hide it in your clothing. The knife won't fit under the wardrobe door, so make sure you hide it well in your clothing. Then you're gonna have to put the keychain back around his neck and wake him by yelling that you heard cutting noises and drilling noises coming from the back bedroom. Hopefully he won't have much time to think clearly, and he'll open this goddamn door to check I'm still here. When he opens the door, I'll act panic-stricken and tell him I heard drilling noises. He'll have no real choice but to put me somewhere else in the house while he goes outside to check things out. There's two very important things to remember here, Amy. You need to get the knife to me ASAP, and you need to persuade him to handcuff me to something, because the only chance I'll get to knife him is when he undoes my cuffs. The hardest part'll be getting the knife to me. If an opportunity doesn't arrive to get the knife to me, you'll have to distract him somehow.
Lena paused.
This is so fucking important, Ames. Amy, are you listening?
Yes,
Amy said half-heartedly.
I have to distract him and give you a knife.
And?
And persuade him to handcuff you somewhere.
Good. The kitchen bench railing would be a good place to suggest handcuffing me to. It'll buy us time and opportunity. Now listen up.
Somehow Lena grew even more serious.
If you don't get an opportunity to hand me the knife, position it where I'll have access to it, like under a newspaper or something. It's majorly important I kill him before he goes outside, Amy. If he gets time to think about why he's feeling groggy, he'll realize you've been playing him like a fiddle. And by the time he's finished with you, you'll be dead and I probably won't be far behind you.
Now close to tears, Amy knew Lena was right. It was a precarious plan and she was scared witless.
There must be another way, Lena. Please.
Listen, darling,
said a calmer, more empathetic Lena.
If we take the wake him up option, we'll both be gambling on a live lunatic waving a loaded gun. But if we kill him while he's asleep, it's all over in a second, and we won't be risking either of our lives. I know you know it's true, Amy, but what are you going to do? It's your decision, but whatever you decide, it's time to go and do it now. I love you, Ames, but you can't get caught in here, darling. And you can't let him wake normally, or he'll know you've drugged him. So make your decision. Make it now, and then you've got to go.
Amy's brain presented her with an idea.
But if I cut his throat, we'll die from the necklaces.
No, we won't,
said Lena, excited that Amy was actually considering cutting Slick's throat.
That soda can you smuggled to me, I cut it and molded two thin strips from it. I shaped it to fit along the inside of the necklace, so the needles couldn't pierce my neck. It was finicky, time-consuming work, because I had to make them fit so well that Slick wouldn't notice them. If you cut Slick's throat, we can easily cut aluminum strips for your necklace, too. And it'll only take a minute or two because the strips won't need to be hidden from him like mine are.
But how do you know the needles won't puncture the aluminum and go into our necks?
Because they're extremely fine needles. The aluminum will stop them.
But how can you be sure?
I've already triggered my necklace. And guess what?
What?
I'm still alive.
Maybe you didn't hit it hard enough, Lins.
Oh, I hit it hard enough, darling. A high-pitched alarm went off after I struck it, and about 30 seconds later, I heard the needles strike the aluminum, and warm liquid ran down both sides of my neck.
So the needles are on the sides?
Amy asked, stalling, trying to put off inevitability.
Yes, the needles are on the sides.
There weren't any needles in the front or back?
Amy, darling, we can't afford to waste any more time. You know what needs to be done. I'm locked in here, so it's your call. I'll love you either way. but it's time to decide what you're going to do.
Amy felt guilt and shame at not being strong enough to march up to Slick and slice his windpipe. Not cutting his throat would be equivalent to killing Lena by her own hand. Amy knew if she was the one locked inside the closet and Lena was free to roam, Slick would already be on his knees burping bursting bubbles of blood through a slit in his throat. And it was at that exact moment a switch automatically flicked inside Amy's head. It was time for brutality for survival's sake.
Okay, I'll do it.
You'll do what?
I'll get a knife. I'll cut his throat.
All good on you, Ames.
In all her 20 years of life, Amy had never associated killing someone with goodness, but Slick had lost the right to live when he gave them no choice but to kill him. It was pure survival. Amy's newfound, limitless strength was about to result in Slick's limited old life.
Okay, Leans, I'm going now. Have you got any advice on how to slice a throat properly?
Yeah, I've had a bunch of time to think in here. Get the longest but sharpest knife you can. Imagine his throat is made of rock. Then, using both hands, press down hard while simultaneously swiping the knife across his throat. Cut that rock-hard windpipe in two. His throat won't slice open as easily as you might think, Ames, so use full downward force while slicing across, and then get the hell out of there. He won't last long after he's cut, but he might last long enough to do you harm if you hang around. Either way, it's not going to be a pretty sight, so after you cut his throat, get the hell out of there fast.
Amy was experiencing a growing focus she'd never known before.
Okay, here I go. Wish us luck. Good luck.
On entering the hallway, Amy could hear Audio Slave's "Your Time Has Come" softly sailing out of the music box in the kitchen. She locked the back bedroom door with barely a sound and moved silently along the carpeted hallway like a tiger slinking over a damp, leaf-covered forest floor. Gliding stealthily toward the kitchen in pursuit of a worthy knife, she repeated a mantra inside her head.
Get a knife. Do it for Lena. Get a knife. Do it for Lena.
Amy could hear Slick snoring, cutting through the music from the far end of the hallway. After briefly viewing her abuser in the bedroom, she turned and entered the kitchen, put on her denim shorts, and tiptoed toward the cutlery drawer, as quiet as a 5'4" mouse.
Get a knife. Do it for Lena. Get a knife. Do it for Lena.
She pulled the drawer's handle gently, trying to avoid the implements inside sliding and making a sudden clatter. Waking his horridness from his snoring snooze was not an option. Looking into the overcrowded drawer, Amy realized it would be a noisy nightmare trying to sort through the clutter, so she closed it and tried the drawer above.
Get a knife. Do it for Lena. Get a knife. Do it for Lena.
On opening the second drawer, Amy was struck by a brilliant light. It was a glittering gift that presented its shimmering self to her. 10,000 white doves flew skyward in concert with a regal fanfare, trumpeting from the balcony of a colossal castle perched precariously somewhere in the jagged snow-capped mountains of a faraway land. Yes, resting right there before her gawking green eyes, in all its gleaming glory, was the mighty meat-carving sword of Lord Wiltshire, appointed forge master to the Staysharp estate, a highly prized and worthy weapon. Boasting a hardened razor-sharp blade, an ornate latticework handle, and a lifetime money-back guarantee. A guarantee Slick wouldn't be needing, not for much longer, anyway. And although the embellished bestowal of the knife was certainly just that, two other things were also certain. This carver was sharp enough to debate with Harvard's finest, and it would only be a minute before Slick would be given a new bottom at the top of his neck. As Amy slid the knife from the drawer, the blade produced an unmistakable metallic ringing schwing, a sound that would make any Hollywood sound effects specialist stand to attention in areas that many would never have thought of making a sound effect for. Looking down at the knife in her shaking hand, reality hit home. It was time to walk where Slick unknowingly lay in wait.
Do it for Lena. Do it for Lena. Do it for Lena.
As Bob Dylan's Knocking on Heaven's Door sailed from the music box, it was a determined zombie-like Amy who proceeded slowly through the kitchen doorway and across the hallway. She stopped at Slick's bedroom door, her hands hanging loosely by her sides, the knife pointing downward from her right hand. Motionless, she stared at him, laid out on his back like a butcher's lamb, his discarded shirt scrunched up beside him, his neck as exposed as a penthouse centerfold.
Do it for Lena. Do it for Lena.
With unblinking eyes and a racing heart, Amy contemplated somebody named Slick and how he would soon be somebody named John Doe. As her eyes became fixated on the worm-like veins running down his neck, her imagination opened its curtains to reveal an adults-only horror movie. With every beat of Slick's heart, Amy envisioned blood erupting from his neck, gushing like a geyser over the bedroom walls and ceiling, cascading off the bed and flowing along the floor toward her like warm red honey, finally stopping and sinking into the carpet like a dying ocean wave disappearing into the sand. Amy's mantra suddenly changed from,
"Do it for Lena,"
to,
"There must be another way. There must be another way. There must be another way."
Her mind desperately searched for an answer, but again and again the same horrifying answer came back. Amy's lungs gasped for air. She'd forgotten to breathe. She now realized her right hand was throbbing from holding the knife too tight, and her left hand had formed into an aching fist, causing Slick's keys to cut into her palm and draw blood. Amy tried hard to regain her composure. She needed to be strong for Lena and for herself. She needed to wipe this slimy stain from the planet Earth in order to survive.
Do it for Lena. Do it for Lena. Do it for Lena.
Retightening her grip of the knife, Amy took a few hesitant steps toward her abuser, stopping halfway between the door and his bed. What she was about to do would change her forever, and she knew it. As she looked down at Slick's scarred face, the words spoken by Clint Eastwood's character, William Money, in the film Unforgiven, swirled inside Amy's head.
"It's a hell of a thing killing a man. You take away all he's got and all he's ever gonna have.
And you won't ever be having me again, Slick,"
she heard herself mumble. Amy's mouth dried, her stomach became nauseous, and her forehead clammy. She was going to vomit, but that would wake him. Urgency filled her shaking body. She had to slit his throat immediately. It was now or never. Like an almighty explosion happening in reverse, Amy induced a mental and physical reaction within herself, compressing all her rampant, fearful feelings into the size of a grain of sand. Numbness took over her entirety as her brain released the necessary chemicals to enable her to slice Slick's windpipe. As Blues Breathe Easy bled from the music box, a calm and focused Amy took three deliberate steps forward and stood directly over his exposed neck. She raised the knife up high and with all her might, Slick opened his eyes. Looking up in calm bewilderment, he asked,
"Amy, why are you standing over me holding a carving knife?"
Hello.
Hello there, it's Marge.
Hello, Marge, what's happening?
I'm just ringing to let you know you've just reached the end of chapter 21.
Oh, good, thanks for that.
Okay, bye.
Don't forget the arrow.
Oh, yes.